Well, I'm Todd Martin. Welcome to Stalk Talk. I'm joined, as always, by Catherine Franz, the Chief Operating Officer for IPSA. And today, also from Laura Wood from LWP Consulting, who is IPSA's lobbyist and government relations specialist, and our 2024 president, Colin Steen. Today on Stalk Talk, got to tell you, we're going to have maybe a little bit of fun. And I'm going to tell you why we're going to have a little bit of fun. This morning, I went to my favorite coffee shop, and their brewed coffee maker was down. And normally, as Catherine knows, I get a 16-ounce brewed coffee with a double shot of espresso in it. Well, they didn't have any brewed coffee. So the first thing they said is, we can give you an Americano. I hate Americanos because they're watered down, you know, espresso. Who wants that? It doesn't have enough flavor. So they gave me a Toddspresso. An Americano with 6 shots of espresso. I am wired for sound. Let me tell you, that thing had a lot of flavor and I feel pretty perked up. So it ought to be fun today. It's almost
Are you seeing sounds now?
Oh, I'm seeing everything. Everything's the whole world is taking on brighter colors. It's like, wow, what the heck? So it's been interesting at the office today. Okay. So really and truly, you know, I was kind of inspired. I've been inspired every year in the fall. And when the coaching carousel starts rolling around and all the speculation for all the football coaches in college start, well, this guy's going to be fired. Who's going to replace this guy? Who's on the hot seat? Who's this? Who's that? And here's the thing. It seems like IPSA right now is undergoing their own version of the coaching carousel because lots of rumors are flying around about a lot of different seed companies and people that are up for sale, people that are looking for additional partners, people that are looking to do things differently. I mean, there's just a whole lot of discussions and noise in the marketplace. There's a lot of noise around competition issues. We've got a guy on Twitter, or I guess X, formerly known as Twitter, who goes by the name of Seed Dog, who is just bringing up all kinds of issues that I want to discuss today. And I, by the way, I have been accused of being Seed Dog. I will tell you, I am not Seed Dog.
I still believe that you could be Seed Dog.
Do what?
I still believe that you could be Seed Dog.
I am not Seed Dog. I am not Seed Dog. I am talking to myself. I've been direct messaging Seed Dog, and I'm talking to myself if I'm Seed Dog. I don't need that. I don't have enough espresso for that in me. So that's kind of the reason that we wanted to, you know, kind of expand, have a little bit of panel, have a little discussion. And of course, there are a lot of things going on in Washington today. And so Laura is keeping tabs on all of that for us, and especially with regards to the competition issue. She's been, you know, keeping us informed and working with us at IPSA now for 3 years over all of this. So it's been, it's kind of an interesting journey. So that's what I want to talk about today. So Colin, where are we going to start?
Look, I think there's lots of rumors going on out there. I'm not going to expound on many of the rumors, but I do think what maybe the thread you draw through it all, Todd, is that we're all trying to figure out, every independent company is trying to figure out, how do we improve our profit margins? How do we sell more, knowing that, you know, we compete against our suppliers of traits and genetics? You know, what are the alternative suppliers of traits and genetics look like? You know, we all know that they're, depending on who you do business with, right, there's moments where you don't want to put your portfolio at risk, both from a profit standpoint or a performance standpoint, by jumping too far into one thing. But at the same time, too, status quo isn't an option for a lot of us, our companies anymore. And so I think everybody, the sense I get is that we're all looking for a solution and haven't quite figured it out or found it yet. And if partnering with another company makes the most sense, then I think that's what we'll look at. Does bigger mean better? You know, do we end up with, you know, 20 really big independents and then the other 100 feed into those 20 out there? I don't know. But it's certainly feeling like everyone's exploring options right now on how we can help improve our profitability and keep our sales going and growing.
You know, from a historical perspective, to give everybody kind of a level set here, so IPSA was formed in 1989. So, you know, we're only 35, 36 years old, But in that period of time when IPSA came into being, and it was originally formed by six independents getting together saying, hey, look, we need some different voice in the marketplace. When IPSA was formed, there were some 300 or so independent companies involved in the production and or sell of seed that are independently owned. And that's it. That's important to note, about 300. You know, today, as we look around at the marketplace, got to tell you, I can probably count about 120 brands that we would denote as independent. Some of those brands are owned by, you know, one company, multiple brands under one company. AgReliant, as an example, a very large competitor, I would say, is an independent. But, you know, here AgReliant has multiple brands underneath them, and they've consolidated some of their brands down. So you do have that. If we really hone it down to just the individual companies, I think we're looking at probably 105 to 110. And then the question is, how many will there be over the next 5 years? Really short period of time. And the reason that's important is because in the last two, at least seven companies that are independents have gone out. Now, how did they go out? They were acquired by somebody else, usually a smaller company or a company that didn't have a succession plan. They've been acquired by other companies along the way that have tried to grow and, you know, maintain and grow their share through that, looking at some of those things. But seven companies in a couple of years, and I see that accelerating because of the current seed marketplace. So, you know, you're talking about a way of life that is about to change from that perspective. And, you know, we talk about the coaching carousel, as I brought that up early. I think I probably have heard no less than eight companies that are now looking at different alternatives to remaining independent in business. Eight. And I got to tell you, whether they'll all eight make decisions around it or something like that, that's a disturbing number when you think about there are not new entries coming into this space. They're not new companies. So when you think about it from that perspective, I think we've got a lot of potential carnage in the marketplace. I guess the question that I really have, I've tried to look at other industries and say, okay, where is it that we see something similar? And I've come into two places, basically independent hardware stores versus Lowe's, Home Depot, Menards, big box, and independent pharmacies would be the other, you know, versus Walmart and Walgreens and CVS and whoever else. And, you know, 50 years ago, the world was full of it, both of those, independent hardware stores, independent pharmacies. Today, those entities still exist, but they're much fewer. They're very local. They're very strong in their marketplace, and they're differentiated by service. So I guess the question is for everybody, are we about to see the independent seed companies go the same way? Laura, what do you think? You've been dealing with stuff at the whole piece level with Washington. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's a tough question. You know, when we think back to the beginning of this administration, there was a huge focus on promoting competition. And so early in the administration, an executive order told over 12 agencies to work together to try and address competition. That said, you fast forward to, you know, in another election cycle, you're hearing some concern from the business community that's big business on the right saying, you know, M&A is our strategy. So this is not popular across the board. How do you promote healthy competition? You know, in a free market, it's not as obvious as it might sound. But one of the things I think is so interesting on the seed industry, I like your analogies. Ironically, I feel like the seed industry is even more complicated. It is so complicated to think about the life cycle of getting seed from a seed company to a farmer and those timelines. And what the executive order did that USDA, I think, did a good job with as a leader of only one of many agencies was to think about the interaction between regulations and patent law with competition. So it's not just competition issues, but it's regulatory issues that also create an anti-competitive environment that, you know, were looked at. And so I think this administration has taken this as a key priority and is doing what it can. The time is ticking, and we'll see how the next administration prioritizes this in terms of federal policy's impact on your question. I can't really speak to the business side as much, but that's what I'm seeing on the government side.
Yeah, and I would just add on the business side, you know, I think the, again, the analogy holds true. You know, where you exist is you have loyal followings. And I think as independents, if we forget what made us, what got us that loyal following, or if the reality is we can't take our eye off the ball for even a, you know, 5 minutes, right? Like you got to just stay incredibly focused on your customer, and you got to stay incredibly focused on your bottom line of your business and your margins and all those things. Otherwise, like you wake up one morning and you're not making any money. You're losing business to your suppliers, and all of a sudden, you know, the epitaph is starting to get chiseled into the stone, right? And it's really tough. And you know, I've got a local hardware store I frequent, Todd, and I know there's certain things I can't get there, right? It's not a big store, so if I need a big Rubbermaid bin, I got to go to Home Depot or Lowe's because they don't have the space in their store to carry that stuff. But if I want to go for like any sort of hardware or plumbing needs or electrical type stuff, right? I know I can walk in the door and get really true one-on-one advice on, no, you don't want that. This is what you want, and that won't work. This will work. And I think, again, it's a perfect analogy for what we want, right? Like think about the difference between corn and soybeans. Like if all I'm looking for is a 2.5 soybean, I can drive up down the lane of any Tom, Dick, and Harry in my county and buy it and be largely very successful. But if I want to know what corn hybrid and what ground to put it on and what works best in strip till versus no till, or, you know, clay soil versus sandy soil, all that stuff, right? That's where, you know, we've said this 100 times. It's the tried old statement that's where we think we shine as independents, and because we have that local knowledge. But boy, if we, again, like if you let open territory sit open too long, if a dealer quits in an area and you don't replace that with somebody right away, or get new blood selling your product out at the farmer dealer level, like, man, it can slip in a hurry on you, because they're, you know, DeKalb and Channel and Golden Harvest and NK and Corteva Pioneer, like they, you know, Brevant, they stop for no one, right? They're rolling one way or the other. And it's so, you know, you just can't take a breath in this market as an independent anymore.
So one of the things that pop up on this is, you know, and no kidding, have corresponded a little bit with Seed Dog back and forth on Twitter. Seed Dog absolutely remains a mystery to me, but I thought some of the interesting comments that he's made along the way, just to give you a little bit of preliminary. Let's see, started using the Seed Dog alias on Twitter a couple of years ago, been in the seed business for nearly 40 years, so he's seen it all. Now, this is Seed Dog telling me about himself. Seed Dog is a way I can help tell the story on behalf of my many friends in family-owned seed businesses. These are some of the best people you'll ever meet. And I got to tell you, you know, haven't been in ag since, growing up on the family farm and then professionally since, I guess about 1990. Son of a gun, that's been one thing that I've always said about seed people. They're, you know, salt of the earth. Ag's got some of the best people anywhere, but seed people are special. They are really good folks. You know, we got a lot of multi-generational businesses. Their focus for decades has been on dealers and customers. They have a connection with their customers big companies would kill for. That's why it's a mystery to me why they've been treated the way that they've been treated. companies can't say what they want because they're concerned about backlash. SeedDog's a great way for people to help tell their story. Interestingly, a lot of what you said, Colin, about resonating with the hardware industry, I think is true. I mean, I also frequent a local hardware store. Actually, there are three. Two are locally owned, but also, you know, carry the moniker of a combined big chain, I guess. Ace and True Value, and one's totally independent. But I can tell you this, and this is, and it is a conscious decision. This is where I'm going to do business. Because it's not quite as easy as just walking into Lowe's, Home Depot, but the differentiating facts are the same things that I think that I see at an independent seed company. Walk in. If I need some help, I'm going to get some informed help. Whereas if I walk into Home Depot and Lowe's and ask somebody where something is that's a staff member, they probably can't tell me, and that's why they have an app. So I can look up on the app and say, oh, it's on aisle 40 down here. Because they can't tell me where it is, let alone tell me what I need if I have a problem or how to use a hammer. Not that I need to know how to use a hammer, but that's, you know, an illustration of the quality individual Lowe's and Home Depot are hiring. Oh, man, that's a broad stroke. Somebody's going to get pissed off about that comment, Kat, but we're leaving it in. So, you know, but really and truly, so you walk into an independent seed company, and I expect a level of knowledge there, a level of concern and intimacy of customer knowledge that's come from years of earning and being focused on the customers and knowing that that is a level of differentiation. I think by and large, that's why we see independents that are growing and successful. I mean, let's face it, probably the fastest growing brand in the country is Beck's. And, you know, I certainly know how they approach it with that level of customer intimacy and knowledge. So, you know, is that something that can win for seed companies? I mean, is that continuing to build on that? Is that something that can help them win?
I think that the you're making around even just rural America, small business, being independent, it really can drive you towards innovation. And I think that some view that as counterintuitive, only multinational companies will drive innovation. And when you look at some of the economic studies around yield improvements over the last 20, 30 years, they have not kept pace with, you know, the need. And the public investment in ag research is also not making up the difference. And so, you know, I think with less competition, you will overall see less investment in the R&D necessary to keep up with the major challenges we all know we face. So, you know, independents are a big part of that picture and experimenting locally and driving some of that innovation alongside just creating jobs in rural America.
So one of the things, so the government has tried a bunch of things under the Biden administration. I mean, you know, under Trump 1, we saw the consolidation of, let's call it, five companies became three companies is basically what it would be. Syngenta was acquired by ChemChina. Dow and DuPont Pioneer went together to form Corteva. Bayer acquired Monsanto at the top of the Monsanto market. Wow, Hugh Grant had to be happy about that exit. You know, so we saw that under Trump 1, and under Biden, what we've seen is a very activist DOJ and USDA going after, you know, antitrust areas. The DOJ is famously going after a lot of antitrust areas in tech. They've, you know, given notice that they're interested in things in agriculture. The USDA has certainly put out competition, you know, guidelines and, you know, appointed different people into the competition space, including seed. IPSA's put in comments with regards to our view on competition in the seed industry. Gotta say, there's been a lot of noise for 3 years and not a lot that's come out of it. So do we expect anything to come out of it, or do we think that this is just going to be noise? I mean, I do have to point back that in 2010, you know, the independent seed companies in a pretty large group met with Eric Holder, who was then the Attorney General of the United States under President Obama. And a lot of comments were made in 2010. I was 2 years into the Obama's first administration, and absolutely nothing was done for the next 6 years. So is this just a listening session to make people feel better and running around to keep people busy? Or do we think that anybody's actually going to do anything, or this is just totally going to be market forces and whatever happens, happens? Catherine, well, you've been on the front lines of this for 2.5 years. What do you think?
I wonder if I'm going to butt in. I know I'm not Catherine, but I was
going to butt in. Yeah, you're definitely not Catherine.
Yeah.
I didn't hear you say Catherine. I thought you said Laura.
No, I said Catherine. You've been on the front lines for 2 years. You're awful quiet.
Sorry. I'm just listening and downloading.
What I was going to say, I did read last night on one of the news sites, I think it was on Politico or something, about J.D. Vance and his quote that he thought Lina Khan was the only person in the Biden administration that's doing a good job right now. I found that interesting. I'm trying to figure this whole thing out. I was reading all the commentary last night. You know, the Teamsters were at the Republican National Convention. Like, this is, I'm trying to, I don't know, Laura, I guess I know you're not a political strategist. Surely you must be finding this somewhat compelling and interesting as well. Like, it's a weird sort of where we're getting to. I don't know how best to put it. I found last night really interesting just reading about J.D. Vance a little bit more. But.
Yeah, well, I think the exact thing is, I'm sorry, I'll let me interject this. Vance has expressed concerns that large tech companies have too much influence in politics and the flow of information has called to break up Google, as well as implying he believes Meta should be split up. He has called Federal Trade Commission Chair Lina Khan, a Biden administration member who is, quote, doing a pretty good job, citing her antitrust law enforcement against tech firms. Vance and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse introduced the Stop Subsidizing Giant Mergers Act, which would end tax-free treatment for corporate mergers and acquisitions of companies above a certain threshold. So, yeah, he's got a few, I guess, what we'd call bona fides out there in the antitrust space. Go ahead, Laura. Oh, now you got to get off mute.
Muted. Get off mute there.
The populism driving this is certainly on both sides. And for a while, it seemed like the political spectrum had almost come full circle from the far left and the far right in terms of that real populism. I know we in rural America are very familiar with populism as a political party even. And I think that that is not going to change in a bipartisan way. I think this administration has gone after all kinds of major sectors that impact all of us in our daily lives. Pharma, tech, you know, grocery stores, the Albertsons Kroger deal. So I do think, you know, siding with the average American is a safe place to be politically. And I think that to the FTC's credit and DOJ's, you know, they have some political cover here for sure, as you're highlighting on both sides.
And hence, yeah, so there's a lot of things in motion. I for one was excited that the government was really going to look at this situation and say, okay, let's put up some levelization on the playing field. I mean, let's face it, this really occurred, and people, you know, I'm constantly amazed how people don't look at history. And I guess because I've lived through so much of it at this point in life, I you know, look back on it and say, oh, this is why that happened. You know, the biotech revolution, within a decade, the biotech revolution that Monsanto really introduced in earnest in 1995 collapsed 11 big crop protection firms into 6 within a decade. I mean, and it happened quick. American Cyanamid was really the first big chip to fall, and a lot of people don't even know who that was today. But boy, I mean, when they went down, they had the soybean market. Roundup Ready soybeans came out. They had no market. There was nothing. It just evaporated over a couple of years. And, you know, but it consolidated these big multinational, huge companies down very quickly as it went forward. It also started moving seed companies into pretty big issues. But the real watershed moment for corn was not the introduction of Roundup Ready corn. It was corn rootworm in 2003. When Monsanto introduced corn rootworm protection in 2003, holy smokes, the world in corn seed changed. The haves and the have-nots became really evident. Those that had great access to corn rootworm early grabbed market share going and coming and kept it. And then on top of that, that's really when I'm going to call it the multinational view that we can buy, you know, independence and create market share started happening. You know, Monsanto at that time formed, now I'm going to forget what the NAC, ASI, American Seed Inc., and, you know, consolidated down a bunch of independent companies. Pioneer tried that about 6 years later in that 2010 area by going through pro access play is what was theirs at that time and doing different things with companies and taking on shares that they eventually took over, you know, five or six companies entirely. Syngenta did that to an extent with Garson Golden Harvest in 2004. And then you also had Dow do it with Dairyland and Mycogen and a couple of others. So basically the big guys decided the best way to get market share was to buy up the little guys. And then they left a large number of independents out there. But it really didn't work out for those companies a whole lot. Syngenta famously had acquired almost 16% corn market share in 2004. And shoot, Colin, you and I have both been there. It's a lot less than that now.
Yeah.
So, you know, and even I would think the ASI companies that Monsanto originally brought, they've consolidated brands down. They've moved some of those brands back out to some of their original holders. I think what the big companies found is that they really could not replicate the buying experience that independents brought forward, and that people wanted that independent buying experience where they could literally pick up the phone and call the owner of the company and say, "Hey, I'm not happy with this situation," and it would be handled rather than calling a nebulous 800 number and getting somebody who might have been in a cornfield before and maybe not. So, you know, when I look back at it, I mean, this has been a 3-decade plus transformation of the seed industry because of technology that has come about. So, I mean, there's a lot of pieces that are in play there, I guess is what I would say. And I'm not sure how you undo that from that perspective. Yeah. Biotechnology changed the dynamics of the entire ag market, and the seed market fell in along with that. So this is where we are today, although we're not seeing the innovation with biotechnology that we did previously. Not a lot of new traits coming forward, and it seems that, you know, focus has been in other areas.
Well, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting is, you know, all of these additional breeding companies, off-patent providers of traits, or, you know, and folks with that have access to germplasm to go out there and do their own thing, whether it's, you know, Breeders Direct or Anari or Ahalo Genetics or, you know, go on down the line. There's lots of these startups and there's lots of people looking at this space trying to make an impact. And, you know, so the tough part is, right, some of this stuff can't happen soon enough for the independent sector, right? So, you know, we've got some people that probably need innovation to happen tomorrow morning and, or access to that new innovation right away. And it's going to be just a little bit further out, than we than we'd like. But, you know, and obviously we hope it's going to force everybody to be a better supplier and a better customer, you know, and better relationships out there. So.
So let me ask you a question. So, you know, and I'm trying to think about ways forward and what we can do. I mean, you know, to help the independents more and more. It's kind of been, you know, the entire focus of my career at IFSA. How do we continue to grow? How do we continue to expand this marketplace given the tools that we've had? We've had good times and bad times. I mean, quite frankly, coming out of COVID, I felt really enthusiastic about where independents were headed. And then, you know, some of the market forces coming out there, whether that's, you know, lawsuits that Bear is facing and the financial pressures that Bear has faced, change the dynamics in the marketplace, access to good traits and genetics, you know, from other places. I mean, what's the next thing that we can expect? I mean, or what can we do to ensure that independents go, you know, can maintain their way of life? Or are we expecting that 5 years from now, they're going to be 20 independents, which would suck.
Yeah, that would suck. Well, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, being an independent, whether you're in seed or your pharmacy or a hardware store, it's difficult to go up against those multinational companies. I mean, you've got pricing to have to deal with. I mean, you have marketing aspects that you can give, like customer service, et cetera, but it is difficult. And that's something that, you know, I feel like IFSA tries to do, is to make their lives easier, you know, whether that's any everyday business stuff or advocating for them on the Hill or anything, but it's definitely an uphill battle.
It is. I mean, it really and truly is a David Goliath issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, you know, what's a rock that you can pick up that you can swing one time and, you know, actually make some good headway in that? I don't know. I know we've looked at a lot of different opportunities, from, you know, germplasm to working with companies on other trait developments. And, you know, I know that in their best of intents, Syngenta's tried to be a great competitor in traits and genetics out there. Corteva has got other traits and genetics and are being successful introducing Enlist into the marketplace in partnership with Harry Stein. A lot of farmers have benefited from some very low prices in some, yep, of those areas. But what is it, I guess, that really comes up, that is there anything that we think we can put our finger on and say, we need to do this in order to, you know, continue to grow? And I do ask that question with a real thing, yep, that, hey, the government's been sitting out there. They've made a lot of noise, and I don't know what's going to happen on the election, but it does look like we're going to have an administration change, given, you know, the debate performance by one guy and the attempted assassination of another guy. And yeah, it's not looking real good for the current team. So they've made a lot of noise. Are they going to do anything, or are we just going to mark this up to another round of, they were from the government and they said they were here to help, but they didn't do a damn thing?
That's possible.
Colin, aren't you glad you became an American this year?
Yeah, exactly. This has been a great year to try out this citizenship deal here. So we're
trial by fire for him, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You get to vote too, man. You get to vote, yeah, for president. That's got to, yeah, be exciting, yeah, for you.
Yeah, no, this is, we're in the big time now. So this is great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to leave all that there for a moment, but it, you know, look, I think Todd, the one thing that I think about with independence is that we are going to have to find ways to make profits and to, that are a little bit maybe non-traditional or a little less comfortable with, right? So I'm not going to say the days of the five county corn and soybean independent company are completely gone, because I think that, but it won't get any easier. We know that. So, you know, how do you add in biologicals? How do you, you know, I look at what Carl Peterson does up there on his testing program, and, you know, their work with Interplant and things like that. Like they, it's okay to be on the cutting edge. What I've realized is that as an independent, we actually have a lot of these startups coming to us and saying, how can we break into the market? Now, maybe we're the tip of the spear for them to come into the market. And then, you know, 10 years from now, they leave us at the altar and, you know, move on to the bigger and better ones. But it is certainly, you know, Rob Seco is doing it on the biological front. You know, like there's some of these companies that are starting to, you know, Legend Seeds, others that are doing a nice job of augmenting maybe lower profits in corn and soybeans with other crops or other technologies. You know, we have an alfalfa and triticale breeding program, right? Those two crops are planted on about 3.5 to 4 million acres a year. Or 4.5 maybe tops, right? These are not big markets, but that's what's helping us right now staying in this thing. And, you know, then we use corn and soybeans to be on the farm and stay relevant and get our foot in the door in other areas. Right. But, you know, I think we're going to have to continue to find those other ways to not start up our own R&D program, for lack of a better term, right? Because you can spend a lot of money in a hurry doing, you know, all the testing and all the stuff on biologicals, and it gets to be really expensive really quickly. But I do think that, you know, the ones of us that stick around the longest will be those that have branched into other areas and done more than just traded corn, traded beans.
No, and I think that's really important. And we're probably, you know, we should push that concept a lot more. I mean, you named it several people there. Peterson Farmseed does a really good job on their testing program. They've really differentiated themselves in their area. Absolutely a fantastic job. I know Legend has moved into some of the other biological areas directly themselves. Rob Seco is touching into that. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, Ben Green at Purple Ribbon has done an unbelievable job of really focusing his business and has, been able to grow his business and operate very well. Pick on my good buddy, Brad Taylor, down at Taylor Seed Farm. I mean, Brad has a company. He'll be super embarrassed and pissed off that I said this, but he has great operational excellence within his company. And there are others. I mean, there are a lot of others. I mean, Dennis Brock over at C-Tech Genetics, I know, has a unique offering in a lot of places on some germplasm that he's been able to really move. The companies that I see that are being successful, like Legacy Agri Partners, is sitting there finding some areas that they can exploit as well to be able to really help grow their business and, as you said, augment some of the corn and soybean pieces along the way. So, I mean, and what is that for every company? Well, that's what, you know, leadership has to find for themselves. And I will, you know, put this disclaimer, just because I mentioned a company does not mean I endorse that company, or if I didn't mention that, do I think that you're not doing a good job? That's just examples, you know.
Yep.
Non paid for examples, so I didn't get any sponsored dollars from any of those folks. But I think that's the important thing, and that is for every company to really kind of look at. Because in some parts of it, I know Seed Dog asked me one time why the media picked up more on the independent seed company story. I mean, I think it's compelling. I think it's a way of life. I think it's, you know, being pushed out by bigger companies. I think it's challenging. You know, definitely would be the old term of co-opetition, where, you know, independent seed companies or their number one vendors are competitors to them in the marketplace too. But why hadn't media picked up on it? They don't care. It's not a big enough story. New York Times does not care about this. It's not a big enough compelling story. So, you know, we're not going to have public outcry that's going to end up helping us. We've got to find a few other ways to do that as well. I will say that I think that one company probably has done as much damage as anyone to the independent seed company by disinformation and positioning things really poorly. And that's FBN. Farmers Business Network is one of these groups that we tried to work with the first year that I came to IFSA in 2015. And, you know, when they put out their seed relabeling study, which was a bogus bunch of crap, and basically accused independent seed companies of doing things illegally and rebagging genetics, I've never seen more disinformation and garbage spewed than by one company than that. And they did some damage to the independent image for people that really go out there and work hard. Just in the name of a venture cap firm and a, you know, CEO that did not understand anything about the agriculture market. I was super thrilled to see that, you know, that failed CEO is now throwing money back behind another co-op to try and redo this again. But I guess he needs to get his butt kicked one more time. Just wish he wouldn't take down investors' money with him. Oh, somebody should respond to that.
It's a free world, Todd. People can make mistakes as many times in a row as they want.
Well, okay. That's what I keep hearing. It's a free world.
Yeah.
So what? This is another one of those depressing things to talk about. What the hell do we do next? I mean, what is it that, you know, we do? IFSA's going to continue to push the independent you know, the independent image, talk to people about what we're doing. I know Catherine and I are talking about really being very aggressive as we start trying to look at opportunities to expand membership. But honest gosh, I'm to the point now that it's time to call a spade a spade. I mean, we're really in the world where we're just going to have to tell people the truth about what's going on and where it is. And, you know, similarly to FBN, I mean, you know, we've got to be able to combat garbage in a new way. So what is it that, where's the hope that we plug in to the independents at this point and say, keep fighting the good fight because we think that, you know, it will, the sun will shine soon.
I think that to your point on the media isn't always going to pay attention to some smaller companies. I do think that's the value of advocacy in Washington, D.C., because those members of Congress do care about their rural job creation and their footprint in local towns. And so that's not going to go away no matter who wins. And so I think part of influence is a little bit being a squeaky wheel, just being in front of people, continuing to tell the story. It might seem like we have to start over again every 2 years and every 4 years, but there's a lot of value in that reset. And fresh staff come in. And so I think between not only the competition agenda, but really some of the regulatory hurdles at EPA that keep prices high for farmers need to continue to be addressed. And, you know, I think that's a pretty bipartisan issue. How can we reduce costs in seed and increase quality in innovation? And it's pretty hard to argue against that, but we have to be out telling that message. So, that's the voice of an association and the value of being a member of IPSA. You get to participate with a larger community and telling the story. And I think that IPSA will remain that key voice for these companies.
Yeah, I think, you know, we hope isn't a strategy, but, you know, it's at the same time too, you know, look, I think Laurie hit on the head. We need to, being on the inside at IPSA, building the relationships with the other companies that you interact with at the annual meeting and at various conferences and at the board meetings is incredibly important. I think it allows us to branch our businesses out and through partnership and through cooperation or coopetition, as you call it, Todd. I think it allows us to do that very well. And at the same time, too, you know, we have a voice and can help direct Laura's efforts in D.C. and with the right people, regardless of administration and regardless of who's in charge. And, you know, I guess I'm a believer that the story will get told. I hope it's long. I'm around long enough to see that story get told. But, you know, in the meantime, we're going to continue at, you know, I'll speak for our own company. And, you know, I think the people I talk to on the IPSA board regularly, you know, we're going to continue to find ways to survive these next few years in a way that, that otherwise, if we don't do anything, we won't. I think that, you know, so we've got to find the cooperation, the strategic crops, products to get into to help buffer up the profit side of the P&L, right? So it's just not a end loss, and there's actually a profit in there, and go from there. Because that's, if we don't do that, it is going to be a tricky few years ahead.
No doubt. Catherine, last word.
I was just going to say that the story of independent seed companies is really beautiful. You know, maybe tragic here in some parts, but really amazing in some other ones. So hopefully we're at the climax here, Colin, and you'll be able to get to the end of that long novel within your lifetime.
We got it.
Yeah, but honored to be part of the team of authors writing that story. So that's all I have.
That's really well said.
Yeah, well put. Wow.
Thanks.
Obviously the brains of the organization. You know, yeah. And I will say, just to close out on this, thanks everybody for participating in here. I mean, the reality is this is something that we've been fighting for a long time, and it is, it's kind of gray out there as we look at some of the challenges that we have ahead of us. But, you know, the independents have been resilient. I think that there's a way to find a path through, and I am not prepared to write the epitaph and say that we're going the way of, you know, other companies or other industries. And I still believe that. And there is one thing that is certain. Love the industry, and the companies still have great people, and there are lots of great stories that span innovation in the real sense. You know, bringing about corn hybridization. You want to talk about innovation? We have companies that have their roots in their existence right there. That's innovation. Those are companies worth fighting for, without any doubt.
Yep.
And I think that's the spirit of all the independents. So, hey, for Laura, Colin, Kat, and me, that's the edition of Stalk Talk for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back here in a couple of weeks.